You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's episode of the show is going to be a mailbag episode. I got six voicemails lined up here from a couple really good ones. I hadn't checked the mailbag in a while. I had like 30 voicemails, so apologies there. Don't know that I could have gotten to them just because of how frequently this has been coming out, but I will be able to get to six today. If you want to get in on the action, 303-578-9393. That's 303-578-9393. Try to keep your voicemails to under a minute. There was a couple of you guys that left like two-minute-long voicemails. Didn't even listen to them, quite frankly. So when I get that many and I see some of them that drag on, a no-go. I got a couple that were really, really quick, so we'll get to those. But I appreciate everybody for sending those in. There really were some good questions that I'm kind of excited to talk about. So without further ado, let's hop right into it.
Hey, Adam, this is Jeff in Denver. My question for you is, what's the one stat that best tells the story of the Nuggets this season, aside from losses, that is, or a number of games that the thrill has missed? Love the show. Keep up the good work, man.
Thanks, Jeff. The easy answer on this one, which I'm not going to use, but I think the obvious one is just the defensive rating and where the Nuggets rank. I believe they are fifth as of today here. I'm pulling it up right here. But, the Nuggets have officially started the third season in a row slow offensively. I really did not expect that to happen this year. It's kind of a surprise. But the Nuggets offense just not in sync, and yeah, they're fifth. So 104.1 defensive rating. But the reason that they are 9-4 is because of their defense, and I just don't think anybody saw that coming. But that's been well talked about. That's been well publicized. The offense obviously struggling. I could talk about the three-point shooting, which I think would be worthwhile to talk about as well. But instead, I'm going to go another direction, and this has sort of corrected itself over the last couple games, really the last game, but I guess you could say the last two or three. 41.2 potential assists for the Nuggets this season. Last year, it was 44.2. The year before that, 47.5. And what I like about the potential assist stat is that doesn't factor in whether you're making or missing shots, because one of the things I hear a lot of people say is, oh, well, the Nuggets offense, it's not different. It's just that nobody's making shots, and that's why the assist numbers are down. But what you see with the potential assists is guys they're just not as many opportunities for assists as there has been. And that's been, if you look at it, it's sort of a direct decline from 2 years ago. I still think that the Nuggets offense sadly sort of peaked in the famous December 15th date 2 years ago with Jameer Nelson and Nikola Jokic in the starting lineup, and just the ball was popping for like 4 months. That's still the longest we've ever seen the Nuggets in a rhythm offensively. It was four straight months where they were just going. But every year it's sort of been a slight decline in potential assists. And one of the things that I think is sort of indicative of where the Nuggets are offensively right now is that there just hasn't been as many assist opportunities in the half court as there has been in years past. The ball has not been flying around. So my answer would be number one, defensive rating. But because that one's so well talked about, I'm going to use the potential assist one here, because I think that's something I'm going to keep my eye on over the next couple games.
Hey, Adam, it's Ken calling from Maine, and I'm interested in getting your opinion on the locations where Jokic is getting the ball. From my perspective, compared to previous seasons, it seems that he is getting the ball a lot more up above the free throw line or at the 3-point line or on the 3-point line. And he's getting the ball a lot less, down on the block. And a lot less operating out of the free throw line extent. When he is in the post, it seems that he has to back himself down into the post a lot more compared to previous seasons. I may be way off, but I'm curious to get your thoughts in terms of what you're seeing. Do you feel like he's not getting the ball in locations where he has in years past? Thanks.
Another good question. First of all, we can track this. NBA.com has stats about where guys are getting touches. I don't know exactly how accurate these are. I imagine they're pretty accurate. They're provided by Second Spectrum using player tracking data. So, you know, other than a couple of minor glitches that probably don't affect the sample size, we can tell. And this year, Nikola Jokic is getting 6.2 post-ups per game. Last year he got 7.5, so that is down by a little bit over one, basically one post up per game. And then paint touches, which they classify as different than post up, so other paint touches, this would be rolls to the rim, you know. He is getting 5.2 this year as opposed to 6.3, so about one fewer paint touch per game. Now, what I'll say is that there have been games where Jokic has touched the ball on the block as much as ever before. The Brooklyn game where he scored all those points, I mean, that was largely off of post-ups. The Phoenix game, he was all over the court, but he did a lot of his damage through post-ups. So there have been, what I would say about Jokic more than anything is that where he has received the ball this year has been uneven. Not necessarily, oh, he's playing one spot or the other more or less. It's just that it doesn't feel consistent night to night. And some of that is, you know, he's such a talented guy that he can beat you. He can sort of take whatever the best advantage is. So you have a really good paint protector or low post guy, you could stretch him out like a Rudy Gobert. Well, then you're going to play outside, force Rudy Gobert to cover in space. If you have a smaller guy like Draymond Green, go down to the block and now you can do your damage there and there. So that's one of the things with Jokic that's positive, and that's why it'll always sort of be a game-by-game variability to him. But that being said, I think a lot of this is twofold, and some of it we've talked about. You know, Jamal Murray has struggled to get the ball to the block this year. Not just Jamal, but several guys, they've had a hard time getting him there. Jokic has had a hard time holding position down on the block, more so even than in years past. It's always sort of been a weak skill of his. Quicker defenders and craftier defenders know how to sort of wait for that pass and then shoot around him, and he needs to get better at holding him off. But I think the biggest thing, and this is sort of my read on the situation, while all of those things play a factor, the biggest thing is that Jokic just hasn't been, outside of the first four games, he hasn't demanded the ball on the block very much. And I guess you could throw the Brooklyn game in there as well. But there's just been a lot of games where he seemed uninterested in going down there, whether that is because of the design of the offense, because of his trust in his teammates, or for other reasons. I think that the best version of him is going to demand the ball there much, much more and find a way to be successful at demanding it. You know, one of the themes, one of the questions I've really received a lot, especially I think from, you know, understandably so, from a lot of my Serbian followers is, you know, why are you so hard on Nikola? Why aren't you sticking up for him, this or that? And my position on Nikola has always been the same. First of all, you know, it's funny whenever people question about my sort of like appreciation for his game. I was the first person here in the States on board the Nikola Jokic hype train. So, you know, it's kind of crazy, first of all, to say that. But more importantly, you know, while I understand a lot of the reasons that Nikola Jokic, I talked about this a couple episodes back in a much more impassioned podcast on this topic, the diagnostic one of, you know, symptoms and the actual problem episode. But as much as I think there are a lot of things working against Nikola and situations where he's been treated unfairly or not put in great position, whether by teammates, coaching staff, you know, the league and how they've handled that whole, you know, situation I no longer want to talk about, quite frankly. As much as I think there's stuff to that, at some point you run out, you just have to say no more excuses. And I think we're seeing this with the guy who nationally has gotten a ton of attention for this has been Karl Anthony Towns, where sure, he's in playing for a coach who is not utilizing him in the smartest way in Tibbs. Like Tibbs just, if you're frustrated with Malone, imagine the Tibbs system where it's just so deliberate and orchestrated and there's just no creativity allowed and all these things. Jimmy Butler, a terrible teammate by all accounts, and especially clashed with him. And I think everybody looks at Towns and says, okay, I understand Yeah, he's soft, or all of these different things that maybe are fair attacks. Or you could say, oh, well, Butler's not doing this for him, and he hasn't allowed that, or Tibbs isn't allowing this, and all those things are fair. But what's also fair is that at some point, you just have to take responsibility for your career and for who you are, and you have to find a way to overcome them. I think the truly great players in this league don't require the perfect scenario or the perfect opportunity. Instead, over time, they sort of figure out how to force their will upon opponents, upon their teammates, upon their coaching staff, upon their organizations. And that's what I think, in a lot of ways, this is the year that I think Jokic has, that's going to be like the big test for him. If you recall my podcast episodes early in the year, I talked about how I was so sort of excited about the season because through the first three or four games, that's exactly what Nikola Jokic did. The situation wasn't perfect. The lineups weren't great, but Jokic seemed to be out there orchestrating and seemed to truly be a leader that was sort of forcing the team to do what it was that he wants, because what he wants is always, almost always the smartest thing. He's the smartest player on the team. So really, I think as much as people can complain, and rightfully so, about some of the things working against him, I'm waiting for Nikola to demand things work out in his favor and for the team to do what it is that he wants. That's when you know he'll have made a leap. And I'll add that I think he'll get there. I really do. I think he's going to get there, hopefully this season, but the team needs to hold him accountable, and he needs to hold himself accountable for things that are within his control.
Hi, this is Desmond Soto Schwartz. I'm out here in Newark, New Jersey, New Jersey Nuggets fan. I just wanted to ask about Gary Harris's shooting troubles. And I thought in the previous game, the Nets game, he was still able to make plays with his shooting troubles. But I thought in this Milwaukee Bucks game that they really sagged off and like dared him to shoot, and he was very hesitant. And at the end, started to force a lot of bad shots. And then when he tried to get more momentum towards the paint, he just was not making good decisions in there. So how do we think, if he continues with these struggles, is it going to let him, like, still be proficient on offense? Or is he going to continue to have these struggles, you know, paired with the shooting throughout the entire year? All right, Desmond from New Jersey, thank you very much.
Okay, another good question, Desmond. Thank you for that one. Just a quick look at some of these numbers. So Gary Harris is shooting 27.4% from the three-point line, which is the lowest since his rookie season. It's early. You know, we're only 13 games in. He is taking slightly fewer three-pointers than he did. Actually, not slightly, noticeably fewer. He took 5.9. He's down to 4.8, which is more or less in line with what he was at 2 years ago. He had sort of, throughout his career, increased his three-point attempt rate every year. This is the first year it's sort of gone backwards, gone in the other direction quite a bit. But it's not just those numbers. His field goal percentage at the rim, just 58.7%. That would also be the lowest of his career since his rookie season. I mean, you can almost just throw out his rookie season because that was he made such a difference, such an improvement after that. But so his numbers are down. Interestingly enough, he is getting to the rim more than last year. If you recall, that was one of my concerns. He got to the rim basically 35% of his shots his sophomore year were at the rim, 38 his third year, and then last year just 25, a huge drop off. Well, he's back up to 33, so he's sort of in between the two great years and last year in terms of just getting to the rim, but the efficiency is way down. Here's the interesting thing. He is shooting by far the most mid-range jumpers of his career. Last year was by far the most, and then this year he's taken it to a whole other level with 11.1%. And one of the things I talked about with Gary is as his handle has improved, as his playmaking and his ability to sort of get to the rim has improved, I think what happens, it's so hard to balance what you can do with what you should do. And there's been a handful of times, this could maybe be a good thing to do a deep dive on. Maybe I'll make a note of this and take a deeper look on DenverStiffs.com sometime this week. But there's been a handful of times where I thought Gary has caught the ball. He is among the best in the NBA at that handoff. If you go under it, if you try to sneak around under it, he stops on a dime and pulls up for three. As his shot has sort of not been falling this year, he and then also just sort of, I think his instincts have changed a little bit as he's worked on other aspects of his game. I think there's been a lot of times, or I shouldn't say a lot, there's been a handful of times where he has, rather than taken what would have been the better shot, the catch and shoot three off that handoff where he was open, instead he's tried to turn the corner. And this is what I mean about sometimes when you gain a skill, you want to try that skill. Your instincts almost change because, oh, I can do this now, so I'm going to try to do it, when instead it should be, oh no, just take this easy one that I've always had in my game, and that's what I'm supposed to do. But part of that, it's hard to know what's chicken and what's egg, because his shot has been off, that maybe he's just lost a little bit of confidence in it and he's zeroing in a little bit more on attacking. The last thing I'll say, he does not appear, especially these last couple of games, this has not been the case earlier on in the year, but he has not looked horribly healthy or terribly healthy over the last couple of games. Shoulder, arm, elbow, something in him seems to be a little bit off, and so that's another thing to keep an eye on. And then lastly, I've talked about this before, so I'll just make a quick note of it. Everybody's shooting, or I should say all of the guards' shooting has been down this year. Jamal Murray's, Malik Beasley's, Gary Harris's. So it makes me wonder if there is something to just the Nuggets offense somehow getting worse, a little bit worse every single year, and off to slow starts every single year. I think there's something to be said for when they're not in a great rhythm right now. So as they find their rhythm again, I think his shooting will increase.
Hey, Adam, Jake from Florida here. What do you think about Monte Morris' development and his ceiling on this team? Thus far, the Nuggets seem to definitely play best when he's on the floor. Do you think he could develop into a Malcolm Brogdon-type player and crack the starting lineup, or is there just no room for him? I'm thinking maybe start Monte, Jamal, and Gary at 1, 2, and 3, or if things get way out of hand, even start Monte and turn Jamal into Eric Gordon. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I am as big of a Monte Morris fan as you will find out there. I just love this guy's game. I love his attitude. I love his approach. The guy is just really impressive. I mean, even as an interview, he's great with media. He's thoughtful. He's insightful. He seems to have fans all over the league, which I think is huge. I could not be higher on him. So his story is that he led the NCAA history with the best assist to turnover ratio. That's how good he is. Now he's in the NBA. Basically a rookie. He hardly played at all last year. So basically as a rookie, guess what? He is leading the league in assist to turnover ratio once again, and at a crazy rate, 10 to 1. He has a 10 to 1 assist to turnover ratio. That is absolutely absurd. I can't even wrap my head around it, how impressive that is. So am I high on him? I am incredibly high on him. I was talking to some guys the other day. It's kind of funny. The only knock on him, if Monte Morris was like 6'3", you know, a little bit thicker, like a little stockier build, not like he needs to add muscle. He just has a slight frame. There'd be like no questions asked about him. You would just say, okay, this is a starting point guard, and maybe he's a future all-star caliber point guard. That's just how steady he is and how much value he brings. The problem is he's skinny, and I think one thing that has really been true across sports over the last several years is that we've learned how much we overvalue size. I mean, just across sports, it seems like size is much less important. Now, two guys of equal talent, of course, the size matters. But so often we look at a player and we say, wow, well, yeah, 10 to 1 assist to turnover ratio, steady, never makes mistakes, solid offensive threat, great passer. Oh, but he's small. As if like being small throws out every other positive trait we just said. Now, that being said, I still do think that his skill set lends himself to being sort of a high-level role player, whether that's off the bench or not. But for this Nuggets team, the contrast between him and Jamal Murray has been so stark, just in terms of when he's on the court, the offense seems to be running very smoothly, no matter who he's on the court with, whether it's bench units, starting units, whatever. He is just so good that I absolutely think that if not a starting role, I think just more minutes for him, just fine minutes. I don't know who has to get cut out, but fine minutes for him, because I think he is that good that he is probably now one of the six most important players on the team, and he should probably play as many minutes. The second part of your question is very interesting, and I want to preface it asking about Jamal Murray and whether or not he's more of a sixth man than he is a starting point guard. The way I'll answer this first is to say that we don't know. I mean, we're so early in his career that His ceiling is so high that his ceiling is way higher than even the best sixth men. I mean, he scored almost 48 points. So right there, you know, you're talking about very few sixth men that can even do that. Jamal Crawford types who are, you know, consistent sixth man of the year type. So if he was a sixth man already, his ceiling would be super high in that regard. There are certainly rosters where even now as a third year player, he would fit very well. I mean, if you have a LeBron James, a Giannis Antetokounmpo, basically a point guard from a forward slot, then Jamal Murray is a no-brainer starter. I mean, he's good enough to be able to do that. The question is, can he run an offense right now when the offense is requiring him to be able to do that? And I think the answer so far this season has been no, at least not consistently. There's been moments. Now, I want to another caveat I want to add into this is that there are so many factors that play into his performance as a point guard that we are really unaware of. They could be, I always say that I thought Murray really struggled delivering the ball in the pick and roll last year for every month except for the month of February. And you look at something like that and you think, okay, why was he so good at the skill in 1 month? Well, of course, that was the month where the Nuggets decided to start playing more free-flowing. So part of me wonders, is Murray just so plagued with decision right now, and he's trying so hard to sort of make the quote-unquote right play rather than just playing basketball? A lot of me thinks that the answer is yes, and he's actually better at being a point guard than what he has let on. Nonetheless, this is not a struggle Monte Morris is having right now. Whatever balance you have to strike between a point guard of just playing within the flow of the game and sticking tightly to the script, Monte Morris seems to have a much better grasp on that than Jamal Murray does at the moment. So my answer is I don't see the Nuggets ever putting Jamal Murray to the second unit this year. I mean, it would take quite a bit for us to get there, but I do think that the Nuggets should find more minutes for Monte Morris and maybe find more minutes for Jamal Murray at the shooting guard spot rather than the point guard spot.
My name is Chris from New York, and over the last 2 years, it seems like the offense had a lot more cutting and easy baskets for Jamal Murray and Gary Harris playing off Jokic. Do you think Vallone is emphasizing to play too much of a deliberate offense and not a free-flowing one? Thank you.
Sort of already talked about this one a little bit, so I'll be brief with this one. The biggest point I would say is that let's see what the Nuggets look like over the next several games. There's two things I'm really keying in on over the next handful of games. I guess three things. The first would obviously be Jokic and just how he handles this moment that he's in right now. I think this, in a lot of ways, this is as much adversity as he has faced, just sort of like mentally taxing. And, you know, there's just I think there's a lot with him right now. And I'm very curious just to see how he handles this, this whole moment. The second thing would be to see if the ball gets popping now that Juancho Hernangómez is inserted into the starting lineup. I suspect that it will help a lot. I don't think it'll solve all problems. They still have things they have to figure out about who they are and how they operate in the half court. But I think that his presence will make a big impact. It's a tough part of the schedule. The NBA is so tough right now, man. I'll tell you what, when I look at the schedule, there's just from here for the rest of the year, it's not like there's a ton of games where you just go, oh man, that's an easy one. I think the Atlanta game here in Denver on Thursday is sort of an easy game. I think that one should be easy, but you know, Houston's sort of getting their mojo back, so that game could be tough. You go on a road trip to the East Coast and you just got talented teams, you know, Indiana, all this stuff. There's just a lot of tough battles for the Nuggets ahead, but I want to see if they can get into an offensive rhythm more similar to what we saw when they look like their truest self, their most the identity that they've built for themselves on the offensive end. Can they get into that groove over the next couple weeks now that Juancho's here to stay? I will say, you guys, if you're really a diehard, you got to check out our YouTube page and subscribe. We're trying to get to 1,000 followers by end of the month. So first of all, that's one reason to subscribe. But Michael Malone had a great press conference today, media availability after practice today at Pepsi Center. And one of the things I really liked about it, he talked about playing with joy. There was a question I asked, so I was really curious about. But he talked about playing with joy. But one of the things he really seemed one of the things I really liked was that he seemed to indicate that Juancho Hernangómez or Malik Beasley, but primarily Juancho Hernangómez, has that starting spot for the foreseeable future. It didn't sound like it was one of those things where if the Nuggets come out and lose tomorrow, like, okay, let's find a new solution. Let's completely throw out the book. And I think, first of all, I think that's the right call. Just anyway. I think Wancho is the best fit there. And even if you put Malik Beasley in there, or he kind of said situationally, they'll decide between those two guys. But I think either one of those guys is good as a good option. But more to the point, I think that Malone just sort of getting out in front of this and saying, look, we're going to give this more than just two games. We're going to give it, you know, a lot of games. Maybe even it made it sound like, you know, several weeks or something like that. So I like that because I think that allows for this group, this unit to really sort of get a rhythm going. And I think what we saw against Milwaukee, a great defensive team, Denver still was able to get a lot of points up. Some guys, 18 three-pointers was the most they've made this season, so you saw the ball go through the net. So I like that. So let's sort of see how the offense gets rolling now with the lineup change. And then lastly, the last thing I'm very curious to find out over this next upcoming schedule, the Nuggets have been great defensively this year, but can they play offense and defense in the same game? Can they? And if not, can they get timely stops? One of the things that was such a killer about the Milwaukee game was that I think Denver was going to, as much as they allowed Milwaukee to score, and some of that was, look, Brook Lopez had the career night. I mean, sometimes a guy just has a career night from you and makes 35-foot three-pointers, and I think a lot of that happened. But what I think Denver was setting themselves up for was to get timely stops in the fourth quarter. Their defense was starting to lock in. Milwaukee was starting to miss shots, and it looked great, but Denver bailed them out by turning the ball over. They weren't getting beat in the half court in the fourth in that final 5.5 minutes. They were getting beat in transition and on easy transition looks because they were turning the ball over. So I'm curious to see Jokic. I'm curious to see how Wancho looks in the starting lineup, and I'm curious to see if Denver can defend while being a good offensive team again.
Hey, Adam. This is Nick from Inglewood. I was just wondering if you could give us a detailed injury report on guys like Michael Porter Jr., Isaiah Thomas, and Will Barton. What is their timetable for return, and what effect will they have on the team when they come back? For example, what will they bring back to the team, and who will get bumped out of the rotation when they come back? Also, I was wondering what your take is on the Jimmy Butler trade. What kind of impact will he make for the Sixers? Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the question. I can't give you too detailed an injury report because, you know, we quite frankly, we don't know a whole lot. I think Jared Vanderbilt, I would suspect, will be available to start playing again in the G League by the end of the year, maybe sooner. And I'm excited for that, man. I'm just curious to see him play. Again, don't hold me to that. This is just kind of a speculation, but you're starting to see him do a little bit more, just be around a little bit. So maybe he's getting closer to being cleared. Michael Porter Jr., I've always said I don't suspect he will be available until the summer. Maybe he'll play in summer league next year. That would be the soonest I can imagine. And both of those two guys, I think I'm so high really on both of them. But I just don't think no matter what they did this year, they would be a part of the rotation. And even next year, they would probably just have that role of rookie where I don't think Denver is going to say, just for example, I've heard some people throw this out. Oh, well, Jared Vanderbilt next year can take over the power forward position so Denver doesn't have to re-sign Paul Millsap for all that money or whatever. And I think there's no way Denver's going to put what would basically be a rookie into the rotation and rely on him. So both of those guys, I think, are really, you look at them as two-year prospects before they really enter as being like major contributors. Maybe at some point during next season they do. Isaiah Thomas back in the rotation, according to Woj, sometime in December. You know, I don't know if one of the things I imagine the team is dealing with right now is Isaiah Thomas wants to get to be 100% healthy. The question is, will he ever be 100% healthy? And that's sort of, I think, probably one of the things they're trying to weigh right now. He wants to be patient to not re-injure himself, but at a certain point, you know, the doctors will tell him, look, you're not going to re-injure anything, or, you know, the risk of that is as low as it can possibly get. The thing is, you're just never going to be 100% healthy. And so that might be where they're at. But I think he's a guy that there's so many questions. Monte Morris has been so good that I just think Denver has to find room for him. And if Jamal Murray is a point guard and Monte Morris is a point guard and Isaiah Thomas is a point guard, then that can get really, really tough about where those minutes get. Now, maybe Denver can now, in anticipation of Isaiah Thomas being available soon, start experimenting with three-guard lineups. And the way you do that is you play Monte Morris alongside Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. Gary Harris slides over to the three. I don't think you can start that lineup, but I do against some teams you can. But more importantly, I think you can find moments for that lineup to be out there. And if you can, then maybe that helps you prepare for Isaiah Thomas's return and Jamal Murray just ends up playing a lot more shooting guard. He still starts at point guard, but maybe your first sub is, you know, Monte Morris into the point guard spot and you slide Jamal Murray over and you bring Wancho out of the game or whatever. So there are some things Denver can do there to sort of prepare for that. And then Will Barton, you know, I put it on Instagram today. If you're not following us, make sure to follow us there so you don't miss this kind of stuff. I don't broadcast it too much, but we really do post unique content on all these different platforms. Will Barton was working out today. He was doing full court ball handling drills. He was doing some shooting drills. So that was really encouraging to see, quite frankly. I mean, he wasn't going full speed or nothing, but just the fact that he was able to move around the court and not look to be like in terrible pain makes me think that maybe his return is, you know, I was always worried it would extend past that like 8 week limit or 6 week limit, whatever it was, but maybe that'll be more of a actual predictor of when he'll be available. But lastly, the reason I kept this question last is because I was sort of just talking, and again, I'm just talking here. This is fun, off the cuff trade speculation type stuff that makes following basketball so fun. This isn't serious. I'm not really saying there's any type of talk or any type of momentum towards this. But one thing I've keep my eye on, you asked about the Jimmy Butler trade to Philadelphia. You know, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, it has been talked about what different personalities they are. And they get along, they respect each other, but they're not really buddies. They're not really like hanging out or talking or vibing with each other. And then if you just watch them play, both guys are tremendous. Two of the best prospects in the entire NBA, just in terms of like your younger guys. Absolute, just complete studs. I think both of them, all-star caliber players, best player on a championship team caliber players. That's how good both of them are. But do they fit? Is it one of those things where you got, two 50-cent pieces that don't add up to a dollar type thing? I happen to think that it does. And then when you add in Jimmy Butler, I just find, look, it could work perfectly. But I would bet that it doesn't. It's not like a Golden State super team fit to me where you're like, oh man, the pieces just all fit and it's going to be beautiful. It's certainly more of a Miami Heat fit, which Miami Heat won two championships, so something worked out well enough. But it's more of a like, yeah, it's not natural. Everybody's going to have to sort of make sacrifices that are, that they don't want to have to make, not because they're selfish players, but just because it's not their best game. Jimmy Butler is great as an ISO player. He's great with the ball in his hands. Joel Embiid is great as an ISO player down on the low block. He's great with the ball in his hands. Ben Simmons is almost exclusively good with the ball in his hands. So you got three guys that, even if they sacrifice, you're sort of taking away what makes them best. And so it gets me thinking, if Jimmy Butler re-upped in Philadelphia and Philadelphia felt like they were close enough to a championship, Ben Simmons becomes a player you could, in theory, trade and get a huge haul for. Not just a like, oh, a poo-poo platter of talent, but you could get a combination of impact players and prospects. So it made me think, and I'm not even going to throw out just for respect to Nuggets players, it's too early in the year to start doing trade talk, but just imagine the fit between, we just saw the Milwaukee Bucks, and Giannis can't shoot. I mean, he just has no jump shot, just same as Ben Simmons. But you see how good he is if you surround him with nothing but shooters. Well, Nikola Jokic, a center who is as good at stretching the defense out as anybody in the NBA. You've got enough guys on the roster who are great shooters. Could you find, obviously, a very expensive package built around one of Denver's young stars, maybe Gary Harris or Jamal Murray? Probably Jamal Murray at this moment has more trade value or whatever, but could you find a deal where you parted with one of your big players, one of your quote-unquote big pieces, but brought in a player of Ben Simmons' caliber to pair with Jokic? I've always said that I think this team's, if you're building around Jokic, the best you can do is to have a point forward at the small forward position. Maybe could slide over to the power forward position, a la Giannis, a la Kevin Durant type player. Well, Ben Simmons fits that bill. He is as good a passer as you will find in the NBA. He's so long. He's a great defender. He can play the four. But more importantly, Denver is uniquely positioned to be able, his weakness is his shooting. You have to sort of always have shooting around him. Well, Denver is uniquely positioned to, not just now, but for the foreseeable future, have have plenty of spacing around him, and then maybe you have a sort of team that can play like the Bucks did last night. I mean, just think about how open that paint was, how hard they were to defend, and that's why their offense is so good right now. Imagine that, but instead of Brook Lopez, who as great as he was at knocking down that stretch three, imagine that's Nikola Jokic, who is not only good at shooting the three and spacing you out, but can also run the pick and roll and the DHO game. My God, that would be an incredible pairing. That you asked me about Jimmy Butler. I don't know how it'll work out, but there is a scenario in which it doesn't work out that great, and Philadelphia ends up thinking maybe they should move Ben Simmons for a King's ransom, and maybe Denver is willing to pay that King's ransom to pair two very, very unique and great prospects. If nothing else, we have a lot of Australian fans. Shout to Australia. We have a big watch party in Melbourne on December 15th. Check out our denverstiffs.com if you want more information. Imagine how many Australian fans we'd gain if somehow we could pair the Joker with Ben Simmons. Fun to think about. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. I'll be back again tomorrow with a recap episode of the game against the Houston Rockets. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.